This is an ABC podcast. This is the Victorian Country Hour with Warwick Long on ABC Radio Victoria.
Oh, yes. Welcome to a very special Country Hour here today. Warwick Long with you on the program at Riola. We're broadcasting from Riola. If you don't know where that is, that's okay. It is a dot on the map. Not many people live here. And you're not really on a road to any major metropolis. You're sort of between Inglewood and Denali. Maybe you throw in a bit of St Arnold, about 65 k's from Bendigo. But there are thousands of people here today, Angus Furley, and they're here for the charity carnival, which has been taking place at these grounds for over 150 years.
How good, Warwick. What a way to spend an Easter Monday for you and I. Barely call this work, would we?
It's a ripper. It's a ripper. What do you like about it? What can you see around you at the moment, Angus? Oh,
well, we're right in the centre. We've been given a great spot here by the organisers. So we've got the wood shop behind you. We've got the dog trails behind me. Vintage tractor pull over there. Endless amounts of food that way. So any direction you look, there's something happening.
The huge amount of vintage cars. I think the Bialaba Pony Club have got a do going on up the hill there. And there's some very interesting goalpost-looking things up near me, which really interest me, Angus.
A rare sight these days to see these and what they're used for.
We're going to learn more about that later. Actually, I think our next guest might know a little bit about them too, being a former champion over here. Matt Caddo is with us here, president of the Riola Charity Carnival. Matt, thanks so much for hosting us here on the Country Hour today.
Thanks for having us. It's great to have you guys here and great to have everyone here. And hopefully so far the weather's holding for us and it's going to be another great day.
And just to those listening around us, if it does rain, you're welcome in the tent. Feel free to come and hang out. That'll be fine. What is this? What is the Charity Carnival? How do you describe it when someone asks you what you do every Easter Monday?
Look, this is a great day for people to catch up. And catch up with people they might only see here from one year to the next. It's a great fundraiser for the local couple of hospitals and back into the grounds and the hall. But look, it's just a great day for the whole family. We try to make it affordable, and there's something for everyone happening all the time, all the day, all through the day. So it's just the tradition that's carried on. And we'd like to think you could miss 150 years and walk in here and you'd know where you were.
And Matt, just talk us through what goes into it. Riola was a town of a handful of houses, 50 people. What sort of volunteer effort is required to make it happen? And where do you draw people in from, extended family, former residents, to make it all possible?
That's right. That's right. It's people that have come back. They've had a connection with the town. Families have grown and moved on, but the people still come back. The committee starts out having our meetings sort of 6 months in advance. We've got a great secretary that just, I feel sorry for her husband because I don't know whether he sees her, the amount of work she does. It all comes together on the day and it's just such a special day. Like I said, it's a lot better than to catch up on a day like this than at a funeral, which seems to be the only way you see people at times. So that's why I really enjoy this. I've never been anywhere else. And it's just, like I said, something for everyone and everyone's welcome and there's people who want to get involved. There's plenty of things that can be done.
And you're at Caddo. We're going to speak to a few of them today. Are there a lot of those same last names in the families that come back and make this thing tick?
It is. That's the beauty of the day. It goes right back to the pioneers, the pioneering families, and the ones that have come along on board as well. It's really been fantastic, but it does go right back to those pioneers. As like I said, we're just one family. We're just one link in the chain that makes the day work.
And Matt, you had 3 years off, I think, because of COVID, and perhaps there might have been concerns about whether you could bring it back after that hiatus, but clearly you did, and I understand last year the 150th was enormous.
Well, yeah, that's right. We nearly died in the ditch, so to speak, with the 150th. Peter Mason was the president before me. He did it for several years, and he did a great job making sure we got over the line, and a lot of people thought the 150, that'll be it, but no, we've got a bright future in front of us.
And for those who don't know, Charity Carnival is in the name. This is an event that raises a lot of money for health services, for this community as well. What kind of money do you raise as part of your efforts here?
Well, last year we distributed $60,000 between the four recipients. There was 20,000 to the Ingold Hospital and 20,000 to the Denali campus of the Maryborough District Health Service. 10,000 goes back to the hall and 10,000 back into the facilities here to make sure we can keep things up to the mark and up to standard.
That's serious money.
It is. And just for one day, for like you say, you blink and you miss this town. So, yeah, for the town that it is and the people, like, you just can't thank our volunteers enough to make this happen.
And, Matt, obviously you're bringing in new things, but there must be things here that have been happening pretty much the same way for 151 times.
That's what I say. They're talking like the wood chop and the sheaf toss and kicking the footy through the hoop. The kids' races, like, you can get the original program, and they're all features.
That's amazing. What have you... You've grown up coming here, Matt. What do you have a prize from? What's your hero moment from back in the day of the Riola Charity Carnival?
Look, I've spent a lot of the time working, so I've missed out on a few things. But anyway, look, I have to say, the sheaf...
You've won a sheaf toss, I've heard.
2016, I won the sheaf toss, and the daughter won Miss Riola, and the son won Master Tiny Tot. So my father was very proud of us that day.
So the 2016 Riola Charity Carnival lives in the memory well.
Yeah, that one goes down in our, that one goes down as a family favourite. Yeah, but look, who knows what happens today? I might have another crack today. So,
is it a rite of passage for someone like yourself to become president of an event like this, or do you just get told it's going to happen at some stage?
No, it's just... Well, that's a great question, but no, it is... When your family's been involved with it from the start and you're just passionate about it, Warwick, you've just got to be involved. You've got no choice.
And we've talked to families who say they've got 40, 50 extended family camped down by the creek or whatever it is for the weekend. So it must be that one time of the year that everyone can get together like that.
Yeah, that's what I say. It's just a great day of bringing the community together. It's for a great reason and it's just a great day.
Couldn't put it better myself. Matt Caddo, have the best day. Thank you so much for having us here. It's been absolutely fantastic. So thanks for joining us on the Country Hour.
Thank you. No, we're very proud to have the ABC here today doing their live broadcast. It's fantastic.
We're pretty proud to be here too, aren't we, Angus?
Absolutely, our pleasure.
We can hear the tractor pull going on in the background. Actually, I can see the plumes of smoke coming up as it's just slowing down, I reckon, around the 90-100 metre mark for that tractor on this tractor pull, which has got a large crowd, huge crowd. At the dog trials near us.
Fully booked, I think the dog trials were.
And you and I were remarking before when a certain sound happened over our back shoulder.
Yeah, so of course there's the wood chop, which is mostly axes, but they've also got the chainsaw section these days. And when those chainsaws started, did the crowd just whoosh across it?
Ooh-wee, the chainsaws bring the people to the yard. They had everybody moving. But it was the tractors, which I can see going on at the moment, where you've been out today, Angus, having a look and a chat to some fellas. What did you find?
Yeah, I went across there this morning, Warwick, when they were all busy unloading, and I had a chat with both Glenn Caddo and John Hanley about what it's all about.
We'd be expecting at least another 10 tractors, you reckon, Glenn?
Yeah,
something like
so.
That, because there's not many Chamberlains here yet, and there's generally a good following of Chamberlains and all the other types as well. We've got quite a few Bulldogs here, so you never know until they turn up, because it's just a voluntary thing. Nobody tells you they're coming. So there's a few tractors here that have come from Gippsland. We're standing in front of a few of them that have come from Gippsland, so, you know, that's a long way away, and it helps that Quambatook has been run and some of them come down from Quambatook, so come here on the Monday. So, yeah, it all goes well for that side of it.
And they're all here to go in the tractor pull?
Nearly all the tractors that you'll see today will be in the tractor pull. There's a couple that'll be just for display that are perhaps too small to be on the tractor pull, but the majority of them are here for the pull, so yes.
And you were telling me just before that it's a bit of a fine art, tractor pulling.
Yeah, well, anybody can get on and drive a tractor, but to get the best out of pulling, if the wheel starts slipping, you've got to slow down until it gets a grip on the track again, and then you can rev up again. Some tractors you can't slow down. The GM motors, they've got to be revving fairly high, otherwise they lose their power band. But an experienced tractor driver at pulls can get on a tractor, and somebody that's never done it before, and there'd be a lot of difference. He'd get a long way further down the track, so... It's just weight. As they're pulling, the weight on the sled gets heavier and heavier, and that's why it's harder the further they get down the track. So it makes for a good spectacle.
And the tractors, they're all loaded up with wheel weights to make them heavier and give them more traction?
Yes. They've got to be basically within reason. You can't have your drawbar too high because that makes it easier to pull, but there is limits on those sort of things. But yes, they're weighted up. All the back tyres would be full of water. Some of the front tyres would even have water in them. So, and yeah, it sorts out the Clydesdales from the ponies sort of thing. So, yep.
And Glenn, this is the 151st Riola Charity Carnival, but the tractor pull side of things, that started in the 80s?
Yeah, about 1989, Rowan, I think was the first year. And like I said, without the COVID period, I think, which we lost 3 years, it's roughly about 31 years. And a bloke called Jim Evans will be here today driving a bulldog, and he's been here since the very start. And as John explained, he's one of the better drivers, and he's one of the one-to-ones to watch, especially in the bulldog section. He's very good at it.
And, of course, the carnival, it came back last year after that COVID hiatus, and I understand it was an incredible turnout last year.
Yeah, absolutely amazing last year. I think all the committee was blown away with what happened last year, and we just couldn't believe the crowd we got and the support we got from everybody, like especially from John's crew and out at Denali that have run the tractor pull. They sort of got that back up and running, and with that COVID period we actually lost two or three of our volunteers that passed away in that COVID period, and they were very important people as far as the tractor pulling side of it was, and to lose those men was a bit, you know, it was a bit of a kick in the gut. So to get it back up and running after that, it's taken a bit, but we're back there now, which is good.
And Glenn, what is it about tractors that pulls a crowd? Of course, I'm sure the crowd was big at Quamatook at the weekend. Just seems to be a fascination. Doesn't really matter if you've got a farming background or not. People just seem fixated on tractors and tractor pulls.
Well, especially today's tractor pull, which is basically a vintage tractor pull. So the most of the tractors you'll see today are probably pre-1960. There will be some 1960s tractors here towards the end of the day. But a lot of it's smoke and noise, Rowan. The Bulldogs are known for blowing out a lot of smoke and a lot of smoke rings and flames coming out the top. So people actually get a little bit excited when they see all that. And the GMs, when they're full noise running down the track, it's a pretty loud experience. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of the noise and the smoke that probably drags them in.
Speaking of noise, I'm not sure if people can hear that, but what are we listening to over there, John? Do you know what they're firing up?
Well, that was a John Deere that just started then, but there is a GM in a Chamberlain in front of it there on the ground that's been running for a little while. So, but those GMs make a lot more noise when they're revving and going down the track, so we'll hear it a lot louder later on in the day.
And is there a particular person here who dominates tractor pulling? Is it someone we should have our eye on?
No, that varies a little bit. I know there is a prize for the Bulldogs. They play for Sheep Stations, those fellas, and they have a prize. And, I haven't seen it going to the same person in a row sort of thing, so it gets shared around. It's fairly competitive. They're there to beat their mates. Most of the tractors here are pretty well geared up, and, it's a good spectacle. You've got no idea who's going to win on the day, because as they go down the track, if they hit a bit of a spot where somebody has spun the wheels before them, they can lose traction fairly easy in that. So there's a bit of an art in driving. You just don't drive down the track. You're trying to pick your best spot, and, it's interesting.
There we go. Glenn Caddo and John Hanley there with the tractors with Angus Verley. There is quite the variety of tractors up there on that hill that are pulling different things, and it's incredible to see.
I asked the fellas there in that interview, but, you know, why is it the tractors pull a crowd like they do? But people just love tractors.
And the kids love it when the front of the tractor goes up,
gives
right?
A little bunny hop.
Yeah, the little bunny hop is the moment where all the kids go, yes, that's so great. If you're just joining us on the Country Hour, we're in Riola today, sort of near Inglewood, 65 k's from Bendigo. We're at their charity carnival. They raise a whole lot of money for local hospitals and so forth here, and it's incredible. There's wood chops, there's dog trials, there's tractor pulls, there's sheaf toss, there's horse events, there's vintage cars, and I'm running out of breath. Angus Verley, who's with me.
And it's the sort of event that you'd find in a big regional centre, just because of the scale of it, the people involved, the facilities, the people who come along. But this is Riola. This is a town of 50 people.
And our next guest is just made her way across from the wood shop whilst we're between a couple of events for her there. Adele Deverell is with you from my hometown of Broadford, which makes me nice and excited. But also, what makes me excited is watching you go about it, Adele. You've already had a win today.
Yeah, picked up a win in the ladies' underhand event, which is pretty good to start the day.
Congratulations on that. How many events are you competing in while you're up at Riola?
Just today in three events. It was a bit of a last minute sort of, they were trying to get the last rally in for competitors. So I said, well, I'm not doing anything. Let's go.
And so you've come from Sydney Royal Easter Show and made your way to Riola. That's a bit of a culture shock, I would have thought.
Yeah, it's a huge change from Sydney to here. I mean, Sydney, you get quite a lot of people. It's sort of a bit of a cattle run through there. You can hardly move. And getting here today, it's good, back to the roots of wood shopping, really.
And the underhand, Adele, is that the one where you stand on the log?
Or? Yeah, that's the one where you stand on top, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. How do you not cut your toes off?
A lot of training and a lot of yelling from when you're a young child.
And I know you've got the Dunlop volley,
got the Dunlop
safety
volleys,
footwear on.
Yeah, got Dunlop volleys and 10 toes.
You're doing well then. How did you find your way into wood chopping as a sport, as a vocation?
Well, I came into it from a fourth generation, grew up in Tasmania, and you get dragged around to these events on the weekends with my dad competing, and you sit on the sides for so long, just get a bit bored watching, so it's easier to pick up an axe and get involved. The day goes quicker, and actually we're doing pretty well for ourselves now, so you know, I've represented Australia twice, and I recently got third in the steel timber sports, got ninth in the world title last week in Sydney, so I'm pretty...
Do you like that? Just dropped into the conversation now. I got ninth in the
world title.
Gosh. What's your favourite event?
Definitely underhand. I feel like that's what I started on, so that's what you grow up sort of really getting involved in, really trying to perfect that. Standing block is becoming a pretty close second favourite. And then, yeah, we go into our chainsaw and cross-cut sawing events as well.
So standing block is when it's up sort of upright and you're just hacking into it with the axe, like from the side, and then chainsaw events... I'd imagine that's pretty self-explanatory to people out there, is it?
They are, yeah. So, but in the timber sports, they can be very, very tricky because you've only got 10 centimetres of wood and you have to do a down cut and an up cut, and you have to do it quickly, and you have to not cut out that 10 centimetre line, which I do pretty much every time except this year.
Adele, how's the sport travelling in terms of participation, getting the next generation involved?
The sport's going really well. I think we've got a pretty strong field of competitors, more women. So women this year at Sydney made up 25% of their competitors. And our only hurdle is the forests are closed. We can't get timber. Mm. So for the longevity of the sport, we're not sure where we stand. So, yeah, we're just sort of doing what we can. We've got some pretty hard wood and we just have to cut what we can get.
Yeah, and that's some of the wood gets wrapped for up to 2 years now for events, just so people know they've got wood for an event. That must be scary in a sport like yours, not knowing if you've literally got the most important part of the equipment to allow you to have a competition.
That's right, yeah. It's pretty daunting knowing, you know, are we going to have enough for next year or the year after that? I know for Melbourne show this year, the wood's coming from Tassie. So, you know...
So it's not just any old wood that you're using.
It's not, no. Yeah. So today, you know, we're cutting messmate today. So we're looking just sort of down the path of more plantation pine, which is a whole new set of gear that we need to buy. So it's going to be an expensive changeover there. So,
and a different skill set, I'd imagine, in terms of how to cut that quickly compared to hardwood?
Yeah, it can be different. Different slopes and angles, things like that. So it can be a whole different, field.
And just on the gear, Adele, I love watching you guys getting your axes out of your lovely wooden boxes, and it's all neatly wrapped up. So how important is it to look after your weapon of choice?
Yeah, that is very important. So you clean them up, spray them down, make sure they don't go rusty, and, you know, they're in pretty tip-top condition. I don't sharpen my own axes. I've got a brother for that. And he also competes. And, if he sees me pull an axe out of my case and it's dirty, he'll have a fair crack at me. He's like, keep your stuff clean.
This is the dumbest of dumb questions, but do you name your axe?
Yes.
Can you share that? Is it radio friendly?
Yeah, I can, yeah. So I name them so I know T1 cuts softwood, T2 cuts poplar, and then I've got one I was gifted from the Meyer family, so that's just got Meyer and H, because that's for hardwood. So I lose track of what cuts what, so if they're named, it's a bit easier for me to keep track.
This is an amazing, amazing event. Adele, hey, congratulations on coming ninth in the world, which is amazing. I don't think I'll ever be ninth in the world in anything, Angus.
100th would
yeah,
be
there
okay.
We go. And thank you so much for coming and joining us and having a chat about your sport today at Riola.
Thank you so much for having me here at Riola. My first time, and I love it.
Brilliant. Oh, my first time too, so well done. Just two people from Broadford, first time at Riola. There we go.
And it's so good. I've watched a lot of wood chopping and never really got an insight like that, so that's fascinating.
How interesting is that, though, that 25% of Sydney is now female in terms of the sport growth? And we're seeing this with a lot of other sports too, the
Absolutely.
Growth of footy and cricket and so forth. Just opening access to another gender can completely change the participation of that sport too.
And to think, you know, 151 years ago when we started here, to have even suggested that, you would have been laughed out of the room. So that's great.
Let's talk about another big event here at Riola. And Gary Perry can join us because he is... he's got a very good note on the back of his hand. I'll get him to tell you about that in a sec. He is looking after the goalposts over our shoulder here. The sheaf tossed, Gary Perry. What is a sheaf toss?
Well, the sheaf, yeah, look, we'll be going back a few years, but this is all about the sheaf hay that was originally the way of harvesting hay, and it's carried on, and there's actual full-blown competitions with this and very high-scoring points and handicaps and so forth. So, but here, we're just here to have a go, and every donation that we get, that's, you know, where that's going.
What are you actually tossing? Is it still a sheaf?
Yeah, it's a sheaf. My little fellow, when he was small, he asked me, he said, what are you doing with a sheep? And I had to explain to him it wasn't a sheep.
The sheep toss sounds a little bit more concerning.
Sheaf of hay. Yeah. And our sheaf here, depends on where we are in the world. Ours is about 4 kilograms, 8 poundish. But you'll get up to 16 in Scotland.
Wow.
And America's different again, and so on and so on.
So you get a sheaf, so it's basically a bundle of hay, right?
Yeah, in a hessian sack stitched in, and you'll have a weighted end, a light end, and then a heavy end.
Oh, so it's almost like a hammer toss, but it's a hessian sack.
You're onto it.
Yep.
And you're using a pitchfork, and yeah.
And you're using a pitchfork?
Yes, oh yes.
It looks like rugby goals over there.
Yeah, it's a H-frame, if you like, if you want to call it that.
A H-frame? Yeah. So participant stands, how far away are they from the goals?
Get underneath it and sort of do your best, and it's not, there's no champions here, we just have a crack at it, and our champion from last year is actually over in Perth, so step up to the plate and have a go.
I've got no chance. Maybe I'll send Angus instead. we already know Matt Catter was the champion. Gary Perry's with you. We're talking about the sheaf toss. How high does the bar go?
I'm not too sure on the measurement, to be quite honest. I'll find out. But
Do you get it to the top?
It has been got to the top, and when people get to the top, that's when they start stepping away from the H-bar, and they just keep going until they can't get over any further.
So fellas back in the day stronger than what they are now?
I'm saying so, because that is what they used to do for a day job.
That's what they say, isn't it, that farm fit beats gym fit?
Yeah, you're onto it. Yeah.
Have you ever won the sheaf toss?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
What year?
Two or three of them, but pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID?
Yeah.
So I was about to ask who the Donald Bradman of sheaf tossing's been, but perhaps it's yourself.
Sorry?
The Donald Bradman of sheaf tossing.
Oh, no.
What a great event, though. I can't imagine there's many places around still running a sheaf toss every year, and they would have been doing that, you know, over 100 years ago here.
It's been there, ever since most can remember. Yeah, and photos to prove.
That's amazing.
Oh, are we going to do it, Wals?
No, well, Angus is looking at it. I think Angus has got the twinkle in his eye.
I'll donate the dollar.
I haven't practiced, though. Maybe next year.
Gary, just before we let you go, if anyone has travelled Sinanad way, I hear they can spot you in a little bit of artwork. Can you give us a skinny on that?
I'm the face that's on the silo and the gold miner in the street. The artist in particular thought I had the right face and beard, the beard mainly, for an 1800s gold miner. But I can tell you now, I was never going to find any gold because I didn't have any glasses on.
That's amazing. You, You must look so good. You're a model. You must look so good. You're in two bits of public art, Gary.
That's... Yeah, I'm still waiting for the funds to come forward. Look, it's great for the township and great for all towns, any sort of artwork, to get people to come through and stop and look.
Well, Gary, so lovely to meet you. So lovely to have you teach us about sheaf tossing as well. Good luck running the event. What time's it on?
Look, we're not sure. This afternoon, I'm saying 4 o'clock.
A. Verley. We'll put him on the list.
But the...
sure was. The might be gone by then.
The weather's going to determine.
Yes, true. We are at Riola. The clouds are overhead, but they're holding off pretty well for us at the moment. Gary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for coming today.
Angus Verley's with me. Angus, you might get rained out of the sheaf toss this year, but next year...
Next year, I'll practice. Practice. Look out, Gary.
It's 12:30. We're broadcasting from the Riola Charity Carnival. There is a whole lot going on. We're going to learn about a pretty interesting display soon on the program. We're going to go into the world of dog trialing as well, and a whole lot more. And someone writing a book on this very event. But right now, let's get some rural news with Emma Field. G'day, Emma.
G'day, Warwick. Well, you may have missed it as you drove off on your Easter holiday, but late Thursday afternoon, the Chinese government announced it would stop putting tariffs on Australian wine, which has crippled the local industry. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese welcomed the decision and confirmed the government would drop its case against China at the World Trade Organization. Initially imposed in 2020, the tariffs reached up to 200%, reducing wine exports from $1.2 billion annually to below $10 million. Australian Grape and Wine Chief Executive Lee McLean says it's an encouraging move, but there's been an oversupply in wine resulting in a drop in grape prices, and that could take a while to sort out.
For those growers in places like the Riverina or around Swan Hill, for instance, we've seen very, very low prices for wine grapes in particular, very high stock levels of wine and red wine in particular, and that's going to have a lasting impact for a little while yet. So the Australian market, even prior to those import duties being imposed, was quite saturated. So we know that the wine market in Australia is still our single biggest market. About 40% rather of what we produce is sold here, right here in Australia. But when we lose our largest export market, of course you would expect that some of that would return back to Australia and try to find consumers here as well. So it has put pressure on businesses, whether they have been exporting to China or not. Certainly, a return to the Chinese market is good news for those exporters, but I think it will have flow-on effects for other businesses as well, regardless of whether they've been exporting to that market or not.
In South Australia, the state government has announced it will provide a $1.85 million support package for its wine exporters and grape growers. The two-year package will provide South Australia's wine sector with funding to help re-engage with the China market. Ag Minister Claire Scriven says China's decision to lift the tariffs is important, but they want to help local sector get back on their feet.
The removal of this tariff is very, very welcome. We've also been working with industry on a package of what they would need once the market was reopened, which has now happened. So there's going to be $500,000 spent on two-way market activation and immersion. Something that was really clear is that people really need to experience our wines, and they also really do value the story that goes with our wines. There'll be $500,000 on promotional marketing and communications campaigns. We'll also have a wine export advisor who will be based in Shanghai to be able to support market activation over the next couple of years.
And to another international trade issue now, this time in the north. Investigations are continuing into what caused the death of more than 100 animals on board a live export ship to Indonesia. Indonesia has temporarily suspended imports from one export yard in the Northern Territory while the investigations are happening. The government has confirmed there have been other deaths at those yards. Clinical signs in the dead cattle are consistent with botulism, although this has not yet been confirmed as the cause. Meanwhile, the trade to Indonesia does continue. There were two ships which left Darwin Harbour on the weekend, and the Brahman Express vessel is set to be loaded up and sail out of Darwin again tomorrow. To WA now, where on Thursday, the state premier, Roger Cook, revealed plans to build a new world-class canola crushing plant just south of Perth. The state government is going into an exclusive lease negotiation with Cargill Australia for a parcel of land next to the Cooperative Bulk Handling Group's Kwinana Grain Terminal. It comes after about a decade of trying to get a processing facility built, and the Premier says he's excited about it.
Canola is an important fuel stock for a whole range of biofuel products, and we want to continue to make sure that we add value to products so that we can continue to benefit from the jobs that come from processing and from the value of that processing process. So the opportunity to bring a canola crushing plant to Kwinana is another opportunity to move up the supply chain, and I'm very, very excited about that development.
And I don't know about you, Warwick, but lots of us enjoyed fish over the Easter weekend. And that's thanks to a lot of fishermen, such as Dave Dyson in WA, who delivered just over a ton of fish to processors at the Geraldton Fishing Boat Harbour, just in time for Good Friday. And despite all the doom and gloom about the sustainability of the West Coast demersal fishery, he says there was heaps of pink snapper about.
They're everywhere. They're lot blow flies. You can't catch other fish through the pink snapper. There's anywhere from juveniles, 38, 39 centimetre undersize, through to 4, 4.5 kilo. There's a good range of fish and they're everywhere.
That wraps up Rural News for this Easter Monday.
Thank you very much for that. Emma Field there with Rural News for you today. We're at Riola at the Charity Carnival today. Warwick Long, Angus Verley with you. A tractor has just finished its tractor pull. A little sprinkle of rain has just fallen and we've got about 30 friends in under our marquee with us. And that's okay. It's the biggest crowd I think I've ever broadcast in front of.
Please, please, come on in. Yeah, take whatever shelter you can. Plenty of room.
We better find out if this rain's going to get any worse right now, though, shouldn't we, Angus?
We should. We better go to the bureau now. I think we've got Stephanie Miles on the line. Afternoon, Stephanie.
Hello. How are you both?
Well, we're staying dry. There's a sprinkle of rain where we are at Riola, Stephanie, but I'd had a look on the radar before and there's quite a bit happening around the state.
Yeah, look, it's quite an unsettled day for places around the state today. That's due to a cold front that is crossing us. Like you said, we've got lots of showers and thunderstorms developing over the western and central parts at the moment. However, we haven't had all that much rainfall just yet. In the last maybe hour or so, we've had maybe up to about 11 mils in Wagon Flat, and we have had about 13 mils at Mount William in the last 30 minutes. So some rainfall around, but just not quite getting in our gauges just yet. However, into this afternoon, we are expecting those showers and thunderstorms to develop more so into a bit of a rain band that's going to be extending from the northwest in the Mallee down to about the Otways in this next couple of hours, and then it will traverse eastwards across the state and hit the Melbourne central and district parts around later this evening and into the overnight period, and then into the eastern parts of the state into the early hours of tomorrow morning. Now, I'm hopeful that everyone has seen that we do have a severe weather warning out that is indicating that there's a chance of flash flooding with some heavy rainfall in these thunderstorms and the rain band that we're expecting this afternoon. So any rainfall that we're expecting up to about 30 to 50 millimetres in about 6 hours, and perhaps even up to about 70 millimetres in some isolated patches as well. So look, a lot of rainfall on the way over the next 6 to 12 hours really for across the state. But then after that, from Tuesday onwards, we've got some cooler conditions coming. So it's really just today that we've got our eyes on.
Oh, so just today. And Stephanie, I suppose any warnings around that we need to be really aware of for this evening?
Absolutely. Make sure to keep up to date with our severe weather warning that we've got current now. It will be persisting into the overnight period and tomorrow morning. And also for any severe thunderstorm warnings that pop up into those thunderstorms out in the western parts at the moment and perhaps over the central parts this evening too.
And just as far as rainfall figures go, Stephanie, what are we expecting totals to be like?
Yeah, I mean, from anywhere east of that line that's just over the western parts of the state at the moment, so perhaps east from about Eden Hope down to Warrnambool or so, and then into our central districts, anywhere between 30 to 50 millimetres expected up until midnight tonight. And then we've got very similar amounts expected perhaps over those eastern parts of the central districts and the eastern districts into the first few hours of tomorrow morning up until about 6 to 9am.
We'll keep an eye on it. Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
This sounds like it could be one of my fun country hours to do tomorrow, which is somewhat facetiously Angus Verley asking everyone, is this the break?
I was about to say, this rain, if people get 30, 40 mil, that is such a nice timely rain. People have already started sowing. Stuff that's sown will be up and away, and then they'll be sowing into moisture. So it doesn't sound like the whole state's going to get it, but pretty dry down at Riola where we are at the moment, so I'm sure some rain would be welcome.
I reckon those who are just lining up for the running races, I can see everybody lining up along that concourse there, would be wishing there was a little rain earlier, because that ground looks mighty hard.
Pretty hard. Not that I'll be finding out, because chief toss possibly, foot race, absolutely not.
I think there's a bit of controversy on this foot race track, because I think somebody in Riola's driven through it in a truck, and it looks
well,
like
it was wet too and left some big ruts, I think.
Bit of running repairs going on, which adds to the spirit of it being a charity carnival, a country carnival, and that's where we are today.
Oh, exactly. And how great is the spirit here today? Just such a good feeling.
You can also learn a little bit here today as well with our next guest. Has the most interesting display.
Oh, absolutely, Warwick. So Paul Hoare has jumped in the chair beside us. Afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Angus. How are you today?
Very well. Now, Paul, you're from Boort. You've got a long-running connection with the Indigenous people of the Boort district. You've written a book about that Indigenous history, and you've built your own Indigenous museum.
That's correct. I thought it's important to save our Aboriginal history, even though I'm a white fella, because I believe it's both Aboriginal and white Australians. I'm one of these people who think to be a true Australian, you've got to learn about the first Australians. So my aim is we all should work together. And in my opinion, the best thing we can do for Aboriginal people is to educate them. And so I have school kids from all over Victoria, even New South Wales, come and visit my museum. And now I've got artefacts handing me off farms. And so I'm got to make sure that I've got a concession plan if I die, so everybody else can see them.
So
we get about 100 people a week come through.
Wow, and it's an incredible array of artefacts that you've had, and that's just all off local farmland around.
Most of it's off local farms. I do have a gentleman, Rob Kroll, who collected boomerangs 50 years ago, and he's decided that my museum gets more than anyone else, so he's put them in my museum. We've even got William Barat's boomerang and Albert Namajira's boomerang, so people can actually come and see them.
And stones. I saw you showing fellas how to break open nuts and so forth.
That's correct. And how they collected their grass seeds. They used to cut the grass with a piece of quartz and make these haystacks 100 metres long and 2 metres high, and like a grass seed going in your sock, every seed worked to the bottom of the pile with the heat and cold, and then it was protected from the rain for 12 months, and just like a thatched haystack, and they had grass seeds for 12 months of the year. And these are things that we're learning. And so I even get Aboriginal people come to my museum to learn their culture.
And that connection, that history, and obviously this is your passion, but is that something you think more Australians need to learn about? Is that sort of connection to country, and also the, like, it's a different form of agriculture in a way to protect those seeds?
Like, for instance, I've got wattle trees growing there, or bushes, because they produce a couple of tonne of seed a hectare. And once you plant a wattle seed, you don't have to sow it again, you don't have to fertilise, and don't have to spray it. And I'd love to see every farm have 20 or 30 hectares of wattle to act as a nucleus for biodiversity.
Paul, you've also got some really special pictures in your museum.
Yes, I have. They're the oldest photographs of Aboriginal people taken in Australia were taken at Boort by John Hunter Kerr. And he bought a camera in 1848. They're just superb to see how the Aboriginal people lived without the influence of white people. It's just incredible.
So that was right when white people were starting to move into the Boort district.
Yeah, so white men started to move into Boort in 1843, and these photos were taken about 1850. So about 7 years later, he took all these beautiful photographs.
Now, Paul, you've got a selection of your grindstones and various artefacts here today. We had to sort of elbow our way to the front of the queue, all the people keen to have a look at what you had.
That's right. Look, it's changing. Over a 10-year period, you can see we're improving with attitudes, and my aim is to teach people to value their Aboriginal history.
Hey, Paul, just before we let you go, tell me what your son's been up to.
Oh, look, my son's more of a radical than I am, and his name's Bradley. And he's just broken the world record canoeing down the Murray River in a pumpkin. And I actually grew the pumpkin. And the secret to growing a pumpkin, I used a ton of composted European carp out of the lake. And it'll grow anything. And we got the pumpkin up to 352 kilograms, and he hollowed it out, and he left Turumbri, and we had a backup boat, and Fred was driving that. That's his workmate from Inglewood, and they travelled down, and they broke the world record, which was 62 kilometres, and they did 67 kilometres canoeing in a boat.
In a pumpkin.
Yeah, they hollowed it out. They took it to Turumbri, tipped it upside down and hollowed it out, took the seeds, because the seeds are now valuable. Because not everybody grows a pumpkin. We would have grown it bigger, but it was cool over Christmas.
Oh.
And it would have gone to 400 or 500 kilograms. Yeah.
That is not where I thought this conversation was going to go, Angus. But what a record, Paul. That's incredible.
It's the world record. He even beat the American record. So that's amazing. And he's absolutely stuffed. And I took a photo at 8 o'clock last night when he finished his race.
That is amazing. Paul, are you going to try and grow a bigger pumpkin and beat the own
record? Absolutely.
Are you going to kayak it one day? Or?
Oh, no, I'm 77, but I'll go in the support base. But the main thing is I'll probably use 2 tonne of European carp next year.
I might get some off you, Paul, for my garden.
Hey, Paul, thanks so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you.
Hey, people want to find your Indigenous museum. Where is it?
My Indigenous museum's right in front of where the food stall is.
In general,
it's on the edge of Lake Bort, and we do it by appointment. They can come at 6 a.m. in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, just as long as they ring up. And we have about 100 people there a week already, and we're having a lot of school children turn up. And we find that once a school's been there once, they're there every year. And that's a great sign.
Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Paul Hoare there. I knew we were going to talk about Indigenous history and his museum. I didn't think we were going to talk about kayaking and giant pumpkins, Angus.
Neither did I, Warwick. He's an interesting man, Paul, and he's always got something of value to add.
But that's what you learn at Riola,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
This is what having conversations with people can do. You've run into people, you learn something, and next you're hearing about a world record pumpkin kayaking event. And that's what we can bring you here for the Country Hour today. It's 14 to 1. Our next guest is trying to capture some of the amazing history of Riola. Julie Peening is writing the book, quite literally, on the 150 years of the Riola Charity Carnival. Julie, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Why are you doing it, Julie?
I love history. I love Riola. I've had a long association with the carnival. My grandfather actually started putting a book together 20, 30, 40 years ago. And in 2019, I thought I would start for 150, which we were doing in 220. Then COVID hit. So it's been delayed by a little bit. So we hit the 150 last year. So I've done a book on every year of the carnival, just little notes, newspaper clippings, and it's all coming together. And by the end of this year, it should be out.
And you're not a Riola local now. What keeps you coming back and connected to this history?
I love Riola. I still have family in Riola, my parents, my brother, heaps of friends. And, yeah, just keep coming back to Riola.
So mostly old newspaper articles that you're getting the info from?
Or? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And different families in the area have kept memorabilia from over the years, so old carnival posters and stuff, like back to 1917, I've got, like, posters, and it's amazing what people have stored in their offices and bedrooms and stuff.
You came here as a young reporter, Angus. Are you hoping some of your clippings are in there?
Loddon Times 2014 to 18.
Absolutely. I have got Loddon Times, so there we definitely.
Go. Which is it sounds like a massive undertaking to try and put all of this together.
Absolutely. Many hours spent at the State Library going through the archives of the old newspapers, and it wasn't always held at Easter in the beginning, so you'd have to go through a year's worth of papers to try and find when did they actually hold the carnival for that year. So
we touched on this with Matt Caddo earlier on, Julie, but you're pretty well placed to tell us what's changed and also what stayed the same.
I'm not sure what Matt's let you know, but the most funny things that I've come across is when they were chasing the pig with the greasy tail and the rooster race, they used to let it go off and they'd go up the hill chasing these animals. They don't do that anymore, obviously. They used to have tug of war, married men versus unmarried men, so...
that sounds like it would be interesting.
Oh, absolutely. And they have different towns versus each other and a little bit of biffo and stuff afterwards. So that's obviously all gone now. But now we've got sheepdog trials, tractor pull, all that sort of stuff. So
Yeah.
And there's still a Riola gift and there's still a sheaf toss. There's still connections to the past, isn't there?
Absolutely. Even the local bazaar, like run by local women, that's been around since 1871, the first one. So they've continued that this whole time.
What's your favourite story that you've managed to unearth in all this research and putting your book together? Is this something that you didn't know about when you went into it that you discovered that you're never going to forget?
There's one thing. They used to have night entertainment, so dances and balls, and they used to hold it at local school. So I can't remember off the top of my head what year, but the local schoolmaster and his family of 8 or 9 kids got kicked out for the night so the locals could have their dance and ball, and they had to find other accommodation for the night.
Sorry, school principal, it's charity carnival night. You're out of your house.
And Charity Carnival was in the name. Has it always been with that aim in mind of raising money for healthcare?
Yeah, absolutely. So it started off originally just for the Inglewood Hospital back in 1871, and then Denali Hospital came in the 1880s, and then as Riola got the reserve and the hall, that got added in the 1908 and 1916, I think, with the hall, and it's been that way ever since.
Amazing history. When's your book out?
End of the year.
End of the year, and it'll probably be here next year, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. Follow Riola on Facebook and updates will be on there.
Julie Peening, thanks so much for joining us.
No trouble. Thanks.
Julie Peening, they're writing the book on the Riola Charity Carnival. Julie, I'm going to shuffle you out of the chair and we'll bring in our next guest, Brian, if we can, which can unearth a little bit more of the history here at the Riola Charity Carnival. Don't run too far, Lisa, because we might need you in a moment. But before we get there, Brian Mason's coming in. Brian Mason, I think, how old are we, Brian? Do you mind saying on the radio?
Born in 1925.
So 98?
Born in 1925.
So now you're 98, 99 this year.
You did the arithmetic.
How long have you been coming here, Brian?
Since about 3.
95 years in.
95 years in. What are your greatest memories of the Riola Charity Carnival?
Probably the same as most of these, running in children's foot races, perhaps a sprint or two and so forth like that.
Did you win anything?
Well, probably a boys' race or something.
Do you still have a medal at home?
My grandson just won the sprint.
Oh!
And tennis as well, Brian?
Oh, yeah, tennis was very popular. There were earthen courts up there, 2 courts down here. And, yes, I did win a tennis one year.
What does Riola, what does this event mean to you and your family, Brian?
It's just the continuity of it, meeting everyone, meeting friends. A lot of friends from Melbourne come up here. Across from Balranald, I've just been talking to someone, and I know people there who, and so forth.
So you're still catching up with friends here, even at 98?
Oh, yes.
How good is that?
And Brian, how many family members do you think you would have that are here today?
I'd have to count them carefully.
But dozens? Is that fair enough to say?
Oh, immediate family, there'd be 10 or 20 in that range. And a few cousins around from various places.
More than 100, I'm getting a little whispering ear over here was.
That's amazing. And is the Charity Carnival as good today as what it was in the heyday as well, Brian?
They're different eras, but in its day, this is a very good one, extremely good. But no people here today came in a T-model Ford or in a horse-drawn vehicle.
I bet. Did you turn up in a horse-drawn vehicle here?
Oh, yes, or the team I look for.
That's brilliant. What is the one thing that they don't have at the carnival anymore that you loved back in the day?
Well, the tug of war was a good event.
Did you win that too?
No, but my uncle was the anchor man for the local team here. And the event was held in front of the bar.
Turn around and watch the tug of war. Brian, so good to talk to you. Thank you so much for popping down and having a chat.
Good, thank you.
Brian Mason, 98 years young. Oh, he's getting a round of applause. Round of applause for Brian,
enough.
Guys. That's brilliant. Oh, where did Lisa go? I was going to grab her to sum it all up for us, but she's just disappeared. But anyway, Angus Verley, we're here. Riola Charity Carnival has been amazing. Sounds like the tug of war would have been quite at the event in front of the bar.
I love what Julie told us about the married versus the unmarried team. Not sure what the thinking was there, but I'm sure it was fun.
If you're the married fellas, you'd let the unmarried fellas win just so they look a little bit good, wouldn't you?
You probably would, surely.
There we go.
I've just got a sheet that's been handed to me with a bunch of wine bottles on it.
Oh!
I'm not quite sure what it is.
Oh, here we go. We've got a dog arriving just in time at the moment. Grab a chair wherever you'd like. There we go.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. Neil, I know you're very busy. Neil Winslade's just joined us. He's running the dog trials today. Thanks for popping over, Neil. How's it all going?
Nice work, mate. Yeah, no, I just have a finished run myself, so the busy part's over now. I can just get to watch and enjoy.
So who did you bring with you?
This is a dog called Allstate's Glint. He's just one of my leading yard dogs.
Hey, tell us, Neil, that the dog trials were fully booked today. So
it was actually a bit overfull, yeah. The spike in entries this year has been absolutely incredible. We're really happy for that. We're really happy to see it.
So what's behind that? You're speaking to the ABC here, so do we take credit and say it's the Muster Dogs effect, or is there something else going on, Neil?
Oh, well, I guess in all honesty, there is a lot of positivity around working dogs and the livestock industry in general. So, we're currently seeing, you know, big interest in the sport and it's getting quite a lot of support. Yeah.
And is it purely the sport of it, Neil, or are people doing it as well just to improve the performances of their dogs so they're more useful on the farm?
I think there's a certain part of that. I mean, every time you go out to trial, you're testing your dog's ability, your training ability, your relationship with the dog in that working situation. And so I think there's an element of testing all of that. There's an element of competing against other fellow trialers and other handlers to benchmark yourself, your abilities and your dog's abilities. And look, it's just good fun, really.
And Neil, great sheepdogs, are they born or are they trained to be great?
Oh, mate, can of worms. I think it's both.
Both, yeah.
I think for all of those things that I've mentioned above, breeding, training and opportunity is my catchphrase. That's what makes a dog. So, having a good, well-bred dog and knowing how to handle it is probably the key.
And we mentioned the numbers, but the spread of people, the spread of ages, the huge crowd around at the moment must make you feel like you're doing something right at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is a very small sort of community. It's a fantastic charity event to see people, really coming out, making a family day of it, sitting around. I mean, the crowds here watching the dog trialing from the moment we started until tonight, it's just big. You get a bigger trial crowd here than pretty much anywhere, so people are enjoying it.
That's awesome. How did you go?
Yet to know. I just ran from the field to here, so
oh,
I don't
thanks,
actually
Neil.
Know. I was running out of time.
Did he do a good job, though?
On his handicap, yeah, I mucked up. I didn't open a gate that I should have opened and I ended up with sheep backwards. But other than that, he was going extremely well. So, unfortunately, I don't get another go until next year to correct my mistakes. And anyway, that's the way it goes. But, yes, he gave me everything.
We'll let you run off. Thanks, Neil.
That is a good dog owner that doesn't blame the dog for a difficult trial, right?
Opening the gate. It's a fair slip-up, so...
Yeah. Hey, it's just a couple of minutes before 1 o'clock. We're nearly done broadcasting from Riola today. If you want to beat the weather, though, you can probably still get here if you're nice and close.
Beautiful.
At the Charity Carnival.
Yeah.
It's shorts weather, even though we're expecting
actually,
a little bit
even
of rain.
For normal people, it's shorts weather.
One of the organisers who got us here, Lisa Caddo, is sitting down next to you, Angus Verley. It can probably help us sum up this event right now. Lisa, we're trying to get to the heart of it. Spoke to Brian, spoke to Julie just before about what makes an event like this tick. You live here now. You've come back here.
I have, which is wonderful.
What makes
great
this
to be home? The people. Pure and simple, it's the people and the community working together for each other. That's the bottom line. You can have all the food vans, you can have this, you can have that, but if you don't have the people, the passion, the love, it's about community. That's pure and simple, the people and the community.
And we miss a lot of events like this now, I think, that connects us a little bit to our closer and immediate community.
Well, I'm taking you to the world at the moment. I'm live streaming on X.
I'm a little bit uncomfortable. I've got a camera
formerly
in my face.
Formerly known as Twitter, I believe, with Elon. But anyway, yeah, it's about the people. and the community and about looking after each other, and that's the way we should be living our lives, whether we live in Melbourne, New York or Riola.
We've only got about 30 seconds or so to go, but what do you want people to know about Riola, the town, more so than the event?
Not much. Don't come here. We're happy. It's the best place on earth, in my humble opinion, Wazza.
Sums it up perfectly. Lisa, I'll get you to hand back to Angus, but that is the perfect final word.
We knew, Lisa, would bring the goods, didn't we, Wazza?
Exactly, and that's why you come here on Easter Monday, right? You're welcomed in on Easter Monday, just don't come back on the Tuesday.
No, we're going to have some more events here at this the park during the year. Look, now that I'm home, there's so many ideas. It's such a great place, and it's all happening here, Riola.
Have you had a good day, Angus?
Well, you know what? We've gone a whole hour without even talking about the food. So that's what I'm off to do. I've had a great day.
I've already seen Angus at the barbecue, so maybe he's going to the pie shop or the canteen. There's many options, many, many options here. It's been great having you here at Riola today. Angus, it's been great for us to be here and speak to so many listeners of the Country Hour and the ABC and catch up with all of them as well. I am actually off. I'm going to Melbourne for the rest of this week on Drive. Jane will be in the chair on the Country Hour with you. Angus will be back, Rural Reporting, and we'll catch you again.